My name is John Gideon Hartnett. My education is in the field of physics, a PhD in physics. I was retired now, but a professor of physics at a couple of universities here in Australia. And I worked primarily in the field of experimental physics, building ultra-stable clocks. It's what in the general area is called time and frequency standards. I also published in astrophysics and cosmology. I'm a biblical creationist. That means I believe in a young Earth, young universe created by God. I don't believe in evolution. In recent years, after retirement, I've focused my attention a little bit, not a little bit, a lot, towards the global tyranny that's been developing for the past few decades, even though even back many decades ago, I was actually warning people about what was coming. But
The
then I focused.
theory of John, the theory of evolution is no longer a theory. It's taught in school. What would you say to anyone that says, "Well, look, you creationists, you haven't got a clue. Actually, humanity has arrived over millions of years through all sorts of, through life first starting out, and that actually to this idea of a creator, we don't need a creator." Something's happened. What would you say to people like that?
I would say that they really don't know what they're talking about, and for this reason, if you're going to talk about evolution, and I use the term very broadly there, then you have to start with the origin of the universe. And the origin of the universe in the secular world was in a singularity that the universe expanded out of, and they call that the Big Bang. Well, no one has any idea, A, where that singularity came from, or even how the universe could expand out of it. And so there's the first problem. And then you have the next problem is the origin of matter in the universe, the formation of stars, the formation of galaxies. None of that comes about with the known physics. You have to make up these fudge factors, particularly the dark matter. You have to invent it. So it in itself becomes a god of the gaps to fill in all the details to form the whole content of the universe. And then you get to say a planet, and you talk about the origin of life, which means life spontaneously arising from non-living chemicals. And various proposals have been made, but no one has a single clue about how life can spontaneously arrive from those inanimate molecules, even if you have all the right kinds. For example, you could blend up a frog in a blender, and life will not arise spontaneously out of that. Now, I'm excluding the fact that that the materials will get infected by bacteria and other blowing things that will feed on it. But in a sterile world where there is no life, no such life can ever arise. So then you have the problem of even if you did get life spontaneously form on the side of a volcano in some warm pool of amino acids, how does it develop into an entire system of organisms that are sexually are reproducing over those billions of years that they claim life has existed on Earth? Again, massive problems. The issue of increased complexity in the genome, because if you start from pond scum and then you over 4 billion years end up with highly complex organisms like human beings and horses and all sorts of other animals that they often call higher life forms, they have extremely complex information coded in their DNA. And where does that come from? Information doesn't arrive by random chance. In fact, the exact opposite occurs. The genome is constantly being degraded. So to believe that a God, a creator, a super intelligent being created all life, created the universe, is not an unreasonable proposition, because we see in nature, and particularly in living things, highly complex information systems that don't simply arise from random chance. So all of that would have to
John,
be explained.
All right, yeah, that'll do fine on that one. Now you're talking there about the complexity of life, but also of course we've got this thing called entropy, and entropy means that things fall apart. The great thing about life here on planet Earth is that it does something different. It actually assembles even more complex stuff, like it builds civilizations. It does rather bad things, like builds nuclear weapons. It's making more and more complicated things through the power of imagination and thought, and through collective organization of humanity. And so I think it's important to take a spiritual look at all of that. It's not just pure behavioristic thinking. There are things which are driving humanity, you know, whether those are organized faiths, religions, beliefs, whatever. People act together. Some people are paid and they work in areas to build things for other people to own, and then charge rent or use them to bomb other people. But, you know, we've got quite a complicated society which is actually bucking the trend of entropy. But one of the things that I remember speaking to you about before is this whole idea of genetic entropy, the idea that, you know, when you're born, you know, you start to grow, you do some reproduction, but as you get older, some of that genetic material, it makes mistakes when it's being replicated in your body, when you're making new cells or whatever. And so can you just take us through that? Because the reason I'm asking you is because I'm interested to hear about King Charles's cancer. And let's just for a moment imagine that he does have cancer, because I don't think that's in any way proven, particularly through the way that the spin machines of the royal family and the national mass media work nowadays. I don't think they do any proper fact checking, actually. And so let's assume that he does have cancer. Can you just explain a little bit about genetic entropy and how cancer works?
Okay, so just winding back a little bit, from birth, we have two types of processes. One is, you could say, fighting against entropy, and the other one is the breakdown due to entropy. When we're young, the machinery in our body is sufficient to grow the body, and so the net result is growth and an increase of information, in a sense of, well, maybe not an increase of information, but an increase of complexity against that decay process. So the point being is the decay process is always there, right from conception. It's just the reverse machinery is working very well. And then as you get past about 20 years old, the ratios shift. You're more dying than you're growing, so to speak. So all body functions, all cells in your body are subject to this inexorable force of decay. And so every time a cell's copy, as you mentioned, the DNA has to be replicated. And occasionally there's a copying error. It's a mistake that doesn't get corrected by the internal machinery. Most are corrected, but there's a very small fraction of those that are not corrected, and they remain retained by your body. So per person per in your life, roughly about 100 new mutations occur that you retain, and they are then passed on to your offspring. So to the cancer question, cancers arrive when a certain mistake accumulates that the repair mechanisms cannot correct, and or either cannot or there are other reasons, of course, environmental changes, chemical environment, radiation, things that damage even the repair mechanism. And then the cancer cells, those that inherit, basically they inherit immortality because they're able to reproduce uncontrolled outside of that normal control mechanism in the body. And that can be merely the product of that random copying error, but I think there's a lot more to it than just that. The added, how would you say, added promoters of cancer are things that interrupt the immune system. For example, the immune system has killer T cells that roam around our bodies searching for those bad cells, those cancerous cells. And if you interrupt that in some way, then of course that creates conditions for the cancers to get out of control. Whether or not King Charles has cancer or not, he's what, 76 or something? That, you know, with age comes a loss in the innate immune system, and that means a loss in the ability to fight against those cancer cells that are constantly being produced in our bodies. So he may have something like that, and depending on, there are some treatments for cancer that do work. I'm talking about in the normal medical world. Vast majority of them do not work, and there's a reason for that as well.
Okay, well, look, can you just take us through all that? I don't think it's really, it's like a bit above our pay grade to figure out whether or not the royal family is lying about King Charles, because, I mean, there is a lot of, you know, if you sit and think about it, he and Camilla have very, very low popularity ratings in the UK. A lot of this is to do with his association now he's a political king. He's an extremely interventionist individual. As head of state, you know, he works a hell of a lot better if he steps back from things and allows the politicians that we elect to run things. But he's a very interventionist. He's been shown to be micromanaging government departments in his black spider letters. He's also taken an extremely, well, some would say an extreme position on the world stage with regards to net zero. And in fact, he's benefiting personally, as the Panama Papers revealed, from these carbon credit systems around the world. So he's extremely political. He's almost like a kind of medieval style king. And it would not be in any way strange to see that he had wanted to, say something which would garner sympathy, gather more popularity for himself, as a cynical, you know, person might do. But look, what about these various treatments? Can you run through cancer treatments and maybe look at different sorts of cancer a bit, but say what you make of the various treatments that are out there and available? And maybe, I mean, obviously one of the most important things is to, maybe we could start with, is just to make sure you've got a really good healthy immune system and how to do that.
Absolutely, that's right. To build your immune system is probably the single most powerful method of fighting any disease, not just cancer, any disease at all. And there was a time some years ago, I have had several cancers, like these skin cancers, but several years ago I was very sick, and so I got into looking into what are the commonalities on people who heal from very serious illness, and there were three commonalities. One was the food that you put into your body. So if you put garbage in, you will get garbage out. So you really damaging your immune system by not feeding healthy, nutritious, chemical-free food. The second one was the stresses in your life, which were things like spiritually, emotionally, or even chemical stresses. These things put stress on your body, and people who, even, I'm not talking here even from like a Christian background, but people of various even different religions that got into slowing down their life and meditating, relaxing, even secular relaxation therapy, all of these things brought benefit because it was de-stressing the body. And of course, removing chemical stress, which in this modern environment has become pretty difficult to do. And the other one was supplementation, that with modern food, depleted soils, they are depleted of a lot of the essential minerals that we need. And people found by finding what they were deficient in. So you're never deficient in a medicine. You're not deficient in a chemical that's not natural to the body. You could be deficient, though, in things like magnesium and even copper to form good hemoglobin. And it's because some of these things are deficient in the soils, and by proper supplementation, people were able to cure. And that was even from very difficult cancers like pancreatic cancer. Even stage 4 pancreatic cancer, people were able to heal naturally from that. And in their case, supplementation was the pancreatic enzymes. They would take massive doses of pancreatic enzymes so that it took the stress off the pancreas to fight the cancer. But I would like to make a comment here, because when I was working at the University of Adelaide, I was working in an institute that was a multidisciplinary institute, not just physics, but had biologists and chemists and geologists, had a whole range. And the guy who was in the office next door to me was obviously in the biological medical area, because on his door there was a sign, and the sign read, "The promise of finding a cure for cancer is how we get our research funding. Not curing cancer, however, is how we get our salary." So cancer research is a industry in itself. It's a crime, really, because it pulls on the heartstrings of people to get massive amounts of funding, when a lot of understanding about how to cure or reverse cancers is already known. But it keeps being, you know, keeps that money coming in that cycle.
Well, I mean, isn't that true for the whole of the pharmaceutical industry, really, that their idea is not to cure people, it's to get them dependent on some drug or other?
Absolutely, it is. So somehow the big C word has a very great emotive effect on people, if you know what I mean. You could talk about some sort of not so well known disease and you won't get that type of funding, but with cancer, and all, I don't know what they call them, pink ribbon days and all these sort of things, in Australia that gets people, hundreds of thousands of people on these walks to the beach, you know, they get paid per mile or whatever it is from their sponsors, all this sort of stuff. But it's an industry in itself. And so when new drugs come out, often the side effects of a lot of these new drugs they're developing is cancer itself, because the chemistry is unnatural to the body. It's not normal chemistry, and it disrupts. Maybe it's part of, you might, you know, the, you might say it's the law of unintended consequences, but the more cynical or conspiratorially minded might say it's intended in order for just what you said, to keep that, to keep people sick so they can keep the pharmaceutical business going well.
Is there any way to fix this, the perversions that there are in the system then?
My first reaction to that is, come Lord Jesus, come. Because it looks to me like it's getting worse and worse. You know, in my lifetime, I don't see it improving. Look, if I can, it's a little bit of a segue here, but it does paint the picture of what I'm thinking. There was a time in the past, now this is getting into the subject of vaccines, there was a time in the past nearly all vaccines were being developed without the use of aborted human fetal cells. There were certain cell lines that were developed as early as the 1960s from aborted babies, deliberately, mind you, these are murdered babies, and they were able to produce in those cell lines immortal cells. So they're cancer. So they produce by some mechanism able to trigger cancerous cells, and then they use those cell lines to develop and test the vaccine. So they have to grow, say, a virus in a cell, that sort of thing. Over time, this became more and more of an industry. So there was a time where there was probably a 50-50 choice between various vaccines that didn't use fetal cells. Now, winding fast forward to the into this century, and you'll find that nearly every new developing vaccine used fetal tissue, kidney cells, and various things like this. And in the last decade, last several years even, nearly every medical development now uses aborted tissue, baby cells, murdered baby cells. So you see, the medical industry has learnt to grow this kind of problem by it's becoming more and more grotesque, as pretty well every modern medicine is now developed either using these type of tissues or at least tested using these type of tissues. So my answer to the prior question is the medical world, the way it's going, is away from any godly view. So the world is getting more evil. It's not getting better. I mean, of course, always in the language, it's about your health and safety, and, well, safe and effective, yeah. But actually, it's not. It's the exact opposite.
What about the use of phages? Are you familiar with phages and bacteriophages?
Yes, I know a little about that. That's as an alternative approach, and particularly in the area of like to replace antibiotics. I think that's an area of current research. But yeah, I mean, look, I don't know a lot about it, but if that were possible, yeah. I mean, that's the same problem as occurring, not just in the vaccines, which I don't believe that they're even necessary, but in all those other areas of medical development. And there's often a suppression. I'm not saying that there are not genuine discoveries. There are, like ivermectin, won the Nobel Prize, what, somewhere around 2005. And that is an extremely good antiviral that that pretty well kills any virus at all. So there are some very good developments. And so, yeah.
I think it's frustrating, isn't it? Because a lot of this is You've got, like, I mean, ivermectin, I find a really interesting example. I mean, we've got here world-renowned Dr. Tess Laurie just down the road in Bath, who has championed the use of this very cheap, simple drug. What she says is actually that it's too cheap, too simple, it's not patented, and people cannot make enough money. Like, Pfizer has just returned some sort of massive multi-tens or 20, 30 billions in profit from its patented vaccines, whereas something like ivermectin is cheap, 30 pence or so a tablet, and therefore it's not of interest to the pharmaceutical industry. So I guess what I'm saying is, why is it that we've no longer got government health services and our elected representatives driving policy on drugs? It seems to be the pharmaceutical industry itself, doesn't it?
Yeah, they're captured. The, you know, governments are captured. I mean, just this morning before talking to you, I was sort of writing a blog post, and I was just writing down these thoughts, you know, about along this line that nowadays all we really get is bread and circuses. It's all about keeping us entertained or keeping us fighting one with another with blue team, red team, and all this sort of stuff, while quietly in the background, laws are being changed and put in place that aid and benefit these large corporations, which is the big pharma, probably one of the biggest sectors of all. And they capture the politicians.
Well, this is what you're describing. Let's just cut to the chase. You're describing fascism. You're describing a corporate state. You're describing Nazi Germany, IG Farben, a massive pharmaceutical chemical conglomerate that was dominating policy, in fact, to such an extent that it decided that it wanted war because it was going to be good for its profits, good for its business, etc. Exactly. And so, you know, you seem to be saying that. But anyway, let's get back to good old Charlie. Yep. We call him Tampon Charlie because of a certain incident with I think it was Diana first was secretly tape recorded and her call released. And then somebody, I suppose, at MI5 or GCHQ somewhere anyway, decided to get their own back, thinking, well, look, it's not fair just to do it to her. Someone needs to do it to him. But anyway, that's another story. But what about his cancer?
Tony, could I ask you a question then? Is it possible that he actually drank the Kool-Aid himself? Is it possible? The vaccines?
I don't think it's remotely likely, no. No, I don't. And because he's an insider. Miller are both insiders. I mean, you know, this is the way I'm afraid it works in a medieval monarchy, is you get a few people. I would suggest even that the Duke of Edinburgh and the Queen probably did have a real vaccine because they thought they were doing the right thing in encouraging the population to have it. Of course, remember, for many people, it's very difficult to believe that anybody could be so scheming as to lie to such an extent. But I'm afraid those of us have been around the block a few times and have also read our history books, and I think understand human nature and the course of humanity over the millennia, centuries anyway, decades more recently, know that these things can happen. But anyway, and also, of course, the death of Princess Diana was not an accident. It was deliberately orchestrated. And she, if you read up on, you know, your fellow countryman John Morgan's book, very good book, How They Murdered Princess Diana, The Shocking Truth. Yeah. So Noel Botham's book of a similar title, you will see that she was almost certainly murdered in the ambulance on the way to hospital. This is an assassination, you know. So this, I'm afraid, is the way things work at the top. And then we've got, you know, this crazy situation with Boris Johnson being sent over when he was prime minister to make sure the 2 months after the Ukraine war happened that it didn't finish then. And then Zelensky bringing in this new decree that anyone that tries to negotiate with the Russians is going to be slapped in irons and goes to jail. So there's lots and lots of orchestra. There's very little. I suppose I'm trying to say very little bottom up left. It's all top down. It's all the clique deciding themselves, and it's quite feasible that Charles might have made sure that rather nasty jabs were given to his parents in order so he could take over, because we know that happened on the succession of Edward VIII, the Nazi king, Edward VIII, when he took over from, I think it was George V, wasn't it? Yeah, his father. He was not very well, but I think they were at Sandringham. And the doctor in his who was attending George V wrote in his diaries. It was published in, I think, the noughties, maybe. Yeah, that when he died, that he had administered lethal doses of various medicines under the instructions of Edward, you know, the Edward VIII, in order to get rid of his father. So this is not, you know, nothing strange about that. But anyway, look, let's get back to Charlie. What do you make of Charles and I suppose Camilla? We're supposed to call her Queen. It seems doesn't seem to kind of trip off the tongue.
Doesn't. No, look, I he's King of Australia too, of course, under the current constitution.
Now, hang on. I thought the Australians were having a referendum to stop all that.
Well, look, we've had one in the past, and it was two-thirds voted against it. I think partly the reason that referendum failed at that time is was, again, tricky political manoeuvring, because they divided the vote to indicate that if we vote for a republic, then we would get basically the way they did it is you could have it where it's just a figurehead, or you could have it where it's like the American model, and that, I think, divided the most of the nation. Some wanted one way, some wanted the other. So the fault would be vote no, because we're unsure of what we would get.
But you weren't.
And I think that would.
Okay, I see what you mean. So it was a confusing vote. Anyway, that doesn't help.
Yeah, well.
Anyway, what do you make of him?
Well, look, I don't trust him one bit. He's a World Economic Forum spokesperson. He seems to be right up there. And my first reaction when he said, or someone said, that he had cancer, or I went in for a prostate cancer examination or something, was a sympathy vote, in which you've already said, because I don't think he's very well liked in Australia. Even though the masses of Australia are still essentially brain dead, but there is a strong anti-monarchist sort of feeling in this country, and then amongst people who are awake to the COVID conspiracy, and of course they're very anti-UN, anti-World Economic Forum, Schwab, Gates, Fauci sort of stuff. They would definitely include King Charles in amongst that. So my view is, I don't know what his political purposes are in that, but I wouldn't trust him.
Okay, look, just to wind up, what advice have you got for people? I know you've already, to a certain extent, been through it. To sum up, just how to keep, because I mean, it seems to me the best thing to do is just keep your immune system healthy. What would you say, in a nutshell, is the best way to do it?
I would say the most important thing is to de-stress your life. And I know that's very difficult, because part of the globalist agenda is to keep everyone with their nose to the grindstone and keep them stressed out about useless wars and left-right paradigm fighting amongst each other.
Well, I mean, the other thing, of course, is to keep you busy paying mortgages at work all the time with not enough time to spend with your family, that sort of thing.
Exactly. Tax you on every dollar you earn, and then tax you on the dollars you spend. You know, like in the UK, it's the VAT, right? We have the GST over here. Same principle, though. I mean, it tax you everywhere. Sales tax on all sorts of things. So you have no money left. You're basically, it's like the rodent on the treadmill, right? You're just running like crazy to keep your head above water. I think that's all by design, that whole system is, you know. But I think people need to de-stress their lives. They need to look up. They need to look to the Creator, the living God, and slow down. And if they can slow down, then maybe, you know, that they can get out from under that, well, let's say get off the treadmill.
But I thought you were supposed to be keeping fit. You need to get on the treadmill, surely.
Yeah, but get on that type of treadmill, not the one that keeps you stressed and worried and frantic. With the first reaction you do when you get a sniffle is rush to a doctor who says you need to have a vaccine. Man, you don't need a vaccine. You don't need all that garbage. Your body is not deficient in some toxic chemical. It's a brainwashing.
Incredible. Yeah, the other thing I'd say, if I can chip in, is spiritual life too. I'm very much aware that people who are not, you know, never been brought up as churchgoers, do sort of, I wouldn't want to go in there, you know, that sort of thing. But then what you do, and you might find an irritating pastor, an irritating priest or a vicar, you might well do, but you will find a lot of love amongst congregations in Christian churches, particularly. I think probably the same is true, although I'm not part of one of a mosque or a synagogue or whatever. But to make sure that you do focus on your spiritual life as well, because that to me is, you know, it's your family, and you know, you don't have your family forever, but you do have that family forever, and it's so important, I think, particularly for people as they get older, to make sure they've got that extra bit of family around them, and it's not just their own, you know, their own kids, their own brothers, sisters, or whatever. That you've got a wider family that can care and love and respect for and can do the same for you. Look, John, whereabouts can people get hold of your books or website, whatever?
I never mentioned that, but that's very good. I have a website that's called BibleScienceForum.com. Or they could also just search my name, johnhartnett.org, and that will take you to the same website, BibleScienceForum.com. And on there is a button for books. In last year, December last year, published two new books, one with my good friend and colleague and law professor, Augusta Zimmerman. And that one is on, it's called Merchants of Death.
Lovely.
With a subtitle, The Oligarch's War on Humanity, and that really takes you through all the information that they've been information gives you the lowdown on what they've been doing to bring about their total global control of this world, which in all the different facets that they've been doing it. The second book is called Apocalypse Now. It's a deliberate play on words, because apocalypse means revelation. And a little bit similar to the movie back in the 70s. But Apocalypse Now is really looking biblically, totally biblically, the book of Revelation, and looking at the events over the past 4 years, trying to name who and what characters could fit in with what is happening. So it's explaining the events of the past 4 years, even obviously going back further, with the events in the book of Revelation. And so that gives you hope too, because we know at the end of the book, God wins in the end against evil. And we promote in both books with my co-author and in the other one myself, a very positive ending, because our souls are, if we trust in the living God, they cannot take our soul, no matter what happens. And God promises eternal life for those who trust in him, and those certainly do not follow the Luciferian agenda.
An interesting thing you touching on there, because for many people, you know, they're atheists, you know, they've been brought up not believing in God. Although if you go back through the centuries, I mean, certainly in this country, you know, we've had God, at least 1500 years of it, Alfred the Great and this sort of thing. And it's almost within our lifetimes, I've seen Christianity fall away, be stripped away from the country. So it's absolutely amazing to see the effectiveness that this, if it is a Luciferian plan, whatever it is, it's managed to succeed to, you know, move whole segments of millions and millions, probably billions of people away from God. You know, so
absolutely.
Important to understand that this is a question which every individual has to visit, probably around sort of teenage years before they reach manhood, around about that time, and to really address that question throughout your life. Because if you make a mistake as a youngster, then you can be living your whole the rest of your life in the wrong angle. But it's never too late to change. I suppose they'd say that to Henry Kissinger and people like that. Okay, just remind us once more of the website, please, John.
It's at BibleScienceForum.com. Could I just add one point to what you just said then? There's no one neutral in this. No one is neutral. You can't claim agnostic or atheism and be neutral. It doesn't work that way. And you're either for God or you're against him.
Okay, John Hartnett, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Tony.